this is exciting. We've got a bean at large.
Haven't we? And he's looking every bit of the bean at large because he's looking like our glamorous foreign correspondent, isn't he?
I'm using a handheld mic.
He's using a handheld mic.
With a sort of wind baffler thing. Well, it looks like a tiny sort of, looks like a tiny wig.
It does look like a tiny wig.
For a sort of prehistoric man.
We also look, it looks like a very small member of the band Kiss is facing Ben when he's back to us.
Presumably poking his tongue out, trying to put him off.
That's what it looks like. It looks like you've shrunk someone from Kiss and taken them hostage. It's a really fluffy mic, that.
It is, yeah. Yeah, so this is the mic I'd use if I was out and about normally, so because I'm away, I'm using this.
Recording your thoughts.
But you're holding it in that correspondent way because you're holding the stick up to your... It also looks like it's the 90s and you're about to say, I'm about to cover a primary school in Gunge. Bring on the Gungecopter. When TV had budgets for just military levels of gunging. We're just gunging random primary schools.
It's quite John Simpson, isn't it?
It's very John Simpson. It's a very freeing Baghdad.
It is, yes.
Well, it's helped by the room, which he's in a completely, it's like quite a small and featureless room, which kind of helps.
Yes, that's true.
With the rictus grin of a war correspondent.
It's true.
Yeah.
You do look like you've been pounding JD and Cokes all night with Simpson and who are the other ones?
Kate A.D. Orla Gerwin.
Just JD and Cokes pounding them.
Oh, it's been Bacchanalian with the whole press corps are absolutely getting it on because they don't know if they're going to be alive this time tomorrow.
Yeah. They're about 3 days behind the news cycle because they're just so pissed on JD and Cokes.
Yeah. This is what no one's talking about. That's why war correspondents do what they do. It's not because of the thrill of being in a conflict zone. It's because the party scene is lit.
Yeah.
Right?
So basically, I'm near a lovely old medieval town. And then, there's a ring road around it. And on the ring road is the
major hotel chain.
And that's where I've decided to stay.
Okay.
And on the road outside the
major hotel chain
is a huge skip that they're filling with mattresses on a daily basis. And I think the message they're trying to send is...
Stop shitting the bed, Benjamin Partridge.
You can soil this as much as you want. We'll keep bringing more mattresses. Don't worry about it. Deep soil.
You relax. It's your time.
You saw the promise on our hotel website, which is no mattresses too minimally soiled for us to completely replace. And you're going to test that in the same way that I'm going to test the infinite breakfast to it. In fact, those two things are related. Those two tests. I'm going to test the infinite breakfast to the max, and I'm going to test the mattress policy to the maximum in a grotesque cycle.
And you can sign up to the coach trips where you accompany them, where they drive them all the way down to the Mediterranean and just dump them into the sea, don't you?
He loves that.
That's right. They have got a kind of guard standing next to them. So yesterday I went up to have a closer look at the soiled mattresses.
And that's what good tourism is about, isn't it? You improvise. If something comes up, you don't have to stick to the tour guide plan, do you? If something happens, if a delightful Italian man invites you into his woodwork workshop, you go with him. If loads and loads of soiled mattresses have been piled up near a ring road, you grab your microphone, you go down, you explore.
So I wanted a closer look, and the guy started, he clocked me.
He just thought it's so Instagrammable, this, he thought, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yet another person.
Another mattress ghoul.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was warned off them, so I don't know if there's some kind of, like...
Were you trying to get onto them?
I thought this is my only chance of being able to do a true Princess and the Pea-style test, just on 25 heavily soiled old mattresses.
And try to detect a small mini-fridge. Instead of a
pee. So what was the story with these mattresses, Ben? I'm intrigued.
Well, it seems like they're sort of swapping out a lot of mattresses at the moment.
Is this from the hotel or from general stuff in the area?
From the hotel. So I'm assuming it's a bed bug infestation, I would imagine.
Oh, nice.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Oh, that's a relief.
That's what I'm sort of banking on. So I've got to burn on my clothes when I get home, I think.
Yeah.
That's how this works.
Yeah.
And before you get home, I'd say.
You may have brought the bed bugs, Benjamin.
What, and caused this?
It's possible.
Wouldn't put it past him. Bed bugs are such a nightmare. I'd say it's probably safe for you not to come home now, Ben, and just be a digital nomad. You and the bed bugs. And sort of try and get them on the payroll if you can.
Just keep roaming.
Maybe they can edit the podcast.
They're pretty good. But bed bugs are such a horrific nightmare. Have you ever had them, either of you, badly?
No, never.
No.
I've had them.
Have you? In your home?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd even know. I mean, if I... if I was to bump into one on the street, I'm not sure I'd recognise it from a...
And that's why they're so powerful, Mike, because they don't take the guise of sort of fully formed human beings wearing clothes and stuff. They're actually very, very small insects. That's part of their genius. They don't introduce themselves. They're not on social media.
They're not on LinkedIn.
No digital footprint.
Very, very small digital and actual footprints. But their tiny little footprints, if you can detect them, are made of your blood.
Are they bloodsuckers?
Yeah.
Blood. Tiny, tiny little amounts of your blood.
Mm. Basically, you'll know if you've got them if you wake up and you're covered in welts. That's how it works, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. But basically, there's two attitudes you can take to bed bugs. One is you go, this is a horrific crisis. My lower legs are covered in welts. There are tiny, tiny little footprint trails all around my sort of home made of my own blood. And you can feel a real sense of, like, you know, a boundary's been crossed, that you've been, you know, you've been sort of violated in some horrible way by these insects living. And because they hide in the crevices.
Your crevices or the bed's crevices?
Well, whichever is warmest and most comfortable, Mike.
Okay.
Take a guess. No, they do actually hide in bed crevices. They hide in bed crevices, furniture crevices, anything that's crevicy. And
so do they prefer a poorly made bed? If it's crisp with hospital corners, if it's a zero crevice bed.
But it's not so much the sheets, Mike, as the... in fact, I'm going to just say it's not at all the sheets, Mike. It's the wooden structure of the bed, the wooden / metal structure of the bed.
Is it?
So they live in the little tiny gaps between bits of wood.
I'm so ignorant of bed bugs.
Now, a lot of people assume, Mike, you probably assume that anything that's like a bit of furniture is just been, carved out of a huge lump of either wood, rock, or plastic, or whatever it's made of.
In our case, ice.
Yes. Exactly, ice. That it's been chipped off, a kind of mother block. But actually, if you look closely at things, Mike, and listeners at home are welcome to do this, you'll actually see that everything is linked up by crevices. Don't we live surrounded by a sort of network of crevices, because if you stick two things together without a crevice, you're either mad or God. It can't be done, can it, Ben?
Why are you asking me?
Because you've got that microphone. You just look very authoritative. You're holding a stick with a mic.
You're looking like, if you don't know, you're probably standing next to a middle-aged man on the scene who will give you a vox pop.
That's true.
A clear answer either way. Yeah.
So crevice creation is a kind of byproduct of all kinds of engineering and architecture. So in your skirting boards, there's crevices. In the doors, there's crevices. So basically, you can feel you're living in this hive of tiny little sort of bastards that come out at night, suck blood out of your body. And you can really panic about it. And you can do things like, you can basically heat up all your clothes or cool down all your clothes. Both of those are options.
Neither make any difference. It just takes your mind off it, doesn't it?
Neither make any difference at all. But you'll do things, you'll be doing things like, I'm putting some chinos in the oven. You'll just find yourself in weird situations like that. I'm just going to pop these chinos out of the freezer, put them straight in, then preheat it so you get a nice crispy finish. I've done this. I've had clothes in the freezer. I've put clothes in the oven. You microwave pants and stuff. You behave like a very unhinged person in a lot of ways.
You braise the jacket.
You'll braise the jacket.
Sure.
Yeah, you'll flambé some socks,
fricassee a Y front.
You'll julienne some tank tops and beef Wellington a boob tube. All these things can be done.
These are all moth tactics. I've done this at the behest of moths.
It's the same in the moth kingdom.
And I would say this is a tip for anyone listening. If you ever buy anything secondhand off Vinted, for example, or from a charity shop, just freeze it for 3 days before you do anything with it.
Yeah. So, but what happens is you start behaving like a paranoid person, right?
Going, this tiny little being's living in all the crevices. Did you know that all objects are made out of crevices?
But actually, you're right. Do you know what I mean? Because there are little things living in the crevices, and they do come out at night and suck your blood, and you can potentially kill or hurt them by putting your clothes in the oven.
And tonight I should go out onto the street and set fire to those 30 mattresses.
Exactly.
It does sound like it, yes.
And dance around them.
Because you were doing society a favour.
The other thing about this hotel is that when I arrived, I sort of checked in, and the woman on the desk said, "We won't be cleaning your room while you're here." Mm-hmm. I said, "Why?" And they said, "We are giving the money to children."
It does put you in a bit of a tricky situation, doesn't it?
It really does.
She's kind of cornered you there. It's quite a clever...
Yes. Your move. Yeah.
Yes, you're still paying, but we have not cooked you the food in the sausage restaurant today because we have given your sausage to the children. Right. Okay.
You will not be sleeping on a mattress during your time here. We have given your mattress to some children.
The toilet paper from your room is with some very elderly orphans, if that's okay with you.
What do you mean they don't look like children? If you are young at heart, you are a child forever. That is what I say about myself. Give me your money. I'm giving it to the children, as in me and my wife. And not our children, actually. Fuck them. Just us.
Oh. So I think the sense of it is that instead of paying for cleaning staff to come and clean your room, they've given that money to a children's charity of some sort.
But at what rate of cleaner are they giving it? Because, do you know what I mean? Like, how do they know? How do you know? How does anyone know that they're giving that charity as the same amount they would have paid for a cleaner?
Good point.
I'm a bit worried about the cleaner. What's happened to the cleaner?
That's a good point. And the cleaner's children. And the cleaner's children's children.
Well, the other thing they said to me was, if you would like your room cleaned, please ask.
Oh, yes. You can choose our bastard package, of course. Simply pull the lever here marked bastard and we will bring you a cleaner. We will make you breakfast. And please, if you just put on this dressing gown with the word bastard written across the back, we will be happy to give you some shower gel.
But that puts me in a strange position because then it's like, if I would like the room cleaned,
yes,
it's suspicious, isn't it, when you say, can you clean the room? It means I've done something horrific and I need professional help to deal with this. Do you know what I mean?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, no, my room will very much need cleaning. Yes. you're a shit smearer. That's what's understood. Yeah, I'm a shit smearer. You're a shit smearer. That's fine. We understand. We have put 500 of our most absorbent mattresses in a skip, ready to deal with the towels that start coming out of your room. We understand that you're a shit smearer and a shit flinger. Is that right? Yes, we've done our research. You fling then smear, isn't it? Fling and smear. Yes, we understand it creates quite the vicious cycle, one might say. You beast.
Well, the trouble with that, Ben, is obviously, well, they haven't gone through the environmental angle, which I think is a strong one. There's excessive cleaning of towels and steaming of linens. In hotels.
That's the usual angle, isn't it?
Yeah. But I've got to say, even though it's a bit wrong, it is quite nice, isn't it? That coming back to that, it's like a sort of reset of reality when you come back to your hotel room and everything's cleaned, pressed, steamed.
That budget hotel scratchy towel.
Yeah. Mm.
But you're right, Henry. That's why, you know, it's a nice thing.
It is nice. And the ever-decreasing size of towels from mega towel down to flannel and all the towels in between, one of which is actually a mat.
It's a lovely little puzzle to get you started with, isn't it?
It's a lovely little puzzle, isn't it? Yeah. Which one is a darned mat?
And we've all dried our face with the mat. Of course we have.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I never feel bad. I think, oh, you, yeah. Next time. You got me.
We've all tried to make a cup of herbal tea in the toilet bowl.
Another thing I like about hotel rooms is the semi-desk.
Oh, yes.
I'm on the semi-desk.
Are you talking to us on a semi-desk?
Of course you are.
The two-legged desk?
Yeah.
Is it a two-legger?
Well, it's kind of a plinth that's just coming out of the wall.
I love the semi-desk, the hotel semi-desk. It's so you can, like, do your correspondence and stuff, isn't it? I think it's a hangover from the kind of great 19th century era of hotels where people would live in a hotel for, like, years and stuff. Isn't it? Like, the idea that you're in your room and you do your correspondence or something?
Yeah, but they'd only need... Yeah, the correspondence is all done by postcard or telegram.
Exactly.
Nothing bigger than that needs to go on this desk.
It's superb, that. Tell us more about your hotel, Ben, and how it's disappointing.
There's no fridge in my room.
No fridge in your room?
No.
No.
That's a budget hotel classic these days.
Oh, it's because they've given it to the... somewhere there are some children who are sitting around a tiny little fridge.
Playing with a mini fridge.
And they're getting absolutely stung for those peanuts. Stung. So you've got no mini fridge? Yeah, well, to me, that's the distinction. That's what makes
major hotel chain.
It's a non-luxury chain. It's a business chain, right? It's a work hotel, not exclusively, but it doesn't pretend to be giving you the twiddles, does it? Like the
no, you're not really supposed to be in there, apart from when you're
exactly.
asleep. It's not.
They're not going to make your towel in the shape of a swan, are they?
No, and if you think that is the case, what's happened is that there is a swan in your room and someone's thrown a towel over it.
You need to get out. You need to get out fast.
and do not take that towel off, whatever you do. even if it's the Megatel, the really big.
Even if it is the Megatel.
Cozy one for the shower. Just leave it. Use the mat and get out.
Get the hell out.
I've got some art in the room.
Have you got art?
Got some art.
What kind of art are we talking?
Ben, don't tell me what yours is. I'm going to get, can I guess, Ben?
Yeah, yeah.
It's some sort of field with one of those things that you blow to tell the time. What are they called?
A dandelion.
Oh, a dandelion.
No, a steam-operated clock. Yeah, it's a dandelion. Divs. Yeah, that's what I'm guessing. Mike, are you guessing?
I think it's the bed bug matriarch.
With her thousands of teats being suckled by her thousands of...
With her thousands of teats, but her single eye.
That would be a really nice, refreshing choice to have something a bit more challenging than you usually get. A single blood red eye. And I think a bit of animation on it, like, so it's holographic, so there may be the thousands upon thousands of teats.
Oh, it should
wiggle
move,
about
absolutely.
as you walk past. Yeah. Be nice. And maybe every now and then emanates some sort of pheromone.
If the sun hits it, yeah, certain times of day.
I like that. Ben, what is it?
This is a bean emergency. Please try to remain calm.
At this stage, because of the Wi-Fi availability in the major hotel chain, I was basically unable to hear Mike or Henry. It was quite nice.
He's so beatific when he can't hear us properly. Look at that smile.
He's so much happier, isn't he?
He's so much happier when he can't fully keep track of what we're saying.
Never seen him more relaxed.
I've never seen...
It's revealing, isn't it? And what is also revealing is that normally he would wait until we've finished our run of episodes before he would disappear into Central or Eastern Europe.
It's true, but
this time he hasn't been able to wait until...
He couldn't wait.
He had a penultimate episode we just done and he was off. This is very revealing.
It's going to get earlier and earlier, isn't it, in the run of a series that he disappears off.
Yeah, I think so.
And gradually, eventually, it'll just be Ben's smiling face. And not even a microphone.
He'll have stuck a picture, a physical picture on each of our laptops.
Of just his smiling face. And actually, we'll all be much happier than we are now.
So I didn't hear that. What were your guesses for the hotel art?
We haven't got time to go over that, Ben.
But we both said bowl of fruit. Let's see the art.
So it's a big...
Suspense. It's a big... extraordinary.
It could still be a big matriarch bedbug, or it could be a big blowy flower thing.
So I don't know if you picked up on that, but during the first section I could hear about 1 in 15 of any word that either Mike or Henry said.
Henry and I came to the agreement that you looked happier than we'd ever seen you when you were.
I think a 14th of us is what you need. That's about right for you, Ben. Yeah, a 14th.
Yeah. And maybe that's what our listeners need as well. Maybe we should ask, just from now on, download your podcast on an app that can manage not just sort of speed up and slow down, but choose the one in 14 setting.
Choose the 1 in 14, and it's just right. You'll end up with a huge smile on your face. That's what Ben had.
I think what you were experiencing was that, you know, I was not enjoying myself because it was all going wrong. I was pasting on a smile. And what it does is that just shows my ability to paste on a big old smile when things are going wrong.
Really? Yeah, your pasted on smile is far more attractive than your usual grimace.
Yes. Your real smile is a bit of a horror show. We can say this now, can't we? I mean, it's full of conflict. It's clearly malevolent. I mean, we all know that from an evolutionary point of view, the smile is the fang bear, isn't it? It's an aggressive act. But it's never so clear as it is with Ben.
Well, that's what they say, isn't it? They say, like, when, you know, those chimps in the PG Tips adverts, like when they were smiling, that was actually them sort of responding to threat.
Yeah.
And that's what you get when I smile.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
When you smile, you look like you're saying, back off and take this waistcoat off me immediately.
And I don't even like tea.
Or I'm going to pull your arms off.
Yeah. I'm going to pull your arms off. I'm going to use them to play the drums on the decapitated heads of your brothers.
For dairy milk.
Who've come in with a very, very attractive package. It's across all platforms. A lot of it's on socials now, which is just a bit more current. They're also opening up the Southeast Asian market to me. I've been offered a deal to decapitate orangutans in Indonesia for the king as part of his holiday plans for next year.
Is that King Charles or the King of Indonesia?
It's going to be King of Indonesia. Then I thought I'd change it to King. It's actually a bit more Windsor somehow in its vibe, isn't it?
Oh, it's very Windsor.
All stand for the king!
We're entering the Regal Zone. Regal Zone. Regal Zone.
Off with their heads!
On with the show.
Listen not to the knaves and the shopkeepers.
Bring me more advisors.
The Regal Zone. Regal Zone.
Of course, with King Charles, he would get the orangutans brought to Balmoral and then beheaded.
That's right. On topic of beheadings, of course, by the time people listen to this podcast, Gareth Southgate will have been beheaded. So he's now a son's head legend, isn't he?
He'll be on he'll be along the Football Manager's Row on Tower Bridge, won't he?
That's right.
We can go and visit them.
Yep. And it will have been done at I think it would just been a quiet ceremony. I think it would just been the King, Ed Sheeran,
and James Corden.
And James Corden presenting the daggers, isn't it? He presents the daggers. King Charles chooses the dagger.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Sheeran mounts it on the top of his guitar.
Yeah, which is then mounted on top of a football, which is then kicked from a penalty spot.
That's right.
And sliced perfectly through.
By David Beckham, while Ed Sheeran sings Castle on the Hill.
It's a moment of national unity, which is much needed.
Were you sad that England didn't win the Euros, Henry? I mean, this will feel quite old by
it's
the time
be very
this
old
goes
news,
out.
Isn't it?
No,
I mean, just the normal amount. Yeah, it was a shame. But
there's the thorny issue of the sweepstake.
Oh, gosh, I forgot that.
Ah, the sweepstake.
So I'm afraid that's your first ever sweepstake.
I didn't even know what I said. Did I say Holland or something?
I got Holland. The final was then, in our house, was in Trenisign. So it was, I got England and Pamela got Spain.
So we all owe Pam a quid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Because you know what? No offence, but we probably don't actually have to give it to her.
Well, you say that. She's got her eye on a dried yak's bollock.
A three-quidder?
She's not going to get a lot of change out of £4 for that. No.
Not if you want to go premium yak's bollock.
Oh, no, no.
So we're talking North Hemisphere yak, left bollock.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that's your prime, isn't it?
Because that's the bollock that normally faces the wind, isn't it?
That's right.
It faces the wind, and it also is closest to magnetic north, and so...
Yeah. That's right. So essentially the grain of the bollock tends northwesterly. Yeah. What that means is that the protein doors on the left of the molecules are open to take on that westerly wind.
They're against the grain of her chewing direction.
That's right.
So you get more grip.
She gets more grip. But also all those lovely west wind minerals, I'm talking, there's microscopic quantities of quartz.
Yep.
Silica.
Yep.
Selenium.
Dick magnesium.
Also, the different zinc oxides. Mm-hmm. Zinc megaoxide, zinc minor oxide, zinc dodecahoxide. So all those...
Thyme. Oregano.
Oregano, of course, is a... it's a crystal, isn't it? Oregano.
Well, sometimes the yak herdsman will blow oregano into the bollocks of the yaks.
Yeah. Well, that's how they signal other herders, isn't it?
That's right. And to help them sleep. Yeah. It's very relaxing for the yak. Yeah, so you wouldn't want a Southern Hemisphere righty. I mean, you'd almost be better off not eating a yak's bollock at all if it was going to be a South Hemisphere righty, because, again, it's got no wind. So it's
very good for a hangover, but...
Yeah.
Well, otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they say it's a hangover cure, don't they? Two bottles of beetroot juice washed down by a South Hemisphere yak's right testicle. And a lot of people think, don't you normally wash down with liquid? No, you have to wash it down with the testicle. So washing down the liquid with the testicle. It's hard to do. but the results are stupendous, aren't they?
But this one that Pam's getting, that's going to be from Prince Charles's personal collection, right, Mike?
That's
why it's £4.
That's right. Yeah. Well, it's from the collection he keeps in his bloody crown, Ben. Why do you think those jewels are so big? Each one's got a yak bollock in it.
There's the ones he keeps in his crown, and there's the ones when he does his royal drive-bys and drive past the town, he'll always toss a few out of the passenger seat window, won't he?
That's right.
And then
arms.
Yeah, exactly. Arms for the poor.
Arms. Which are always collected by members of his security detail dressed up as
peasants.
As peasants. Yeah.
Thank you, my king. Thank you.
Then return to the motorcade before they hit the next town, normally. So it all starts again.
Anyway, should we turn on the beam machine?
Let's do it.
Yeah, in the name of the Yak Eunuch, turn it on.
Okay, this week's topic, as sent in by Pat from Ely.
Pat from Ely, thank you.
Thanks, Pat.
Archaeology.
Is it now?
When I was a little kid, you know when people used to ask you what you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah.
My stock answer for about 5 years was probably archaeologist.
I also had a phase of that. That or Egyptologist as well. Basically, I think I'd read a couple of Tintin books and thought, yeah, this is the life for me.
Yeah.
It's between that and Indiana Jones, basically. And I thought, yeah. That's the life I want.
I think I was very much in the Tony Robinson sphere.
Ah, right, okay. Yes, yeah, I think I imagine myself as a sort of whip-laden adventurer.
What, Tony Robinson? What do you mean? Oh, you mean a glamorous, good-looking academic with a lover in every port who fights baddies and always has a wise crack and always has a...
He's got a good friendship with a local man as well, that kind of stuff he's got, yeah.
And has beautiful women falling in love with him from both sides of the Great War.
Yeah, one of his main problems in life is femme fatale.
Yeah. So Tony Robinson.
Yeah.
so it is. Just if anyone had any doubts, we're talking about Tony Robinson.
So, whereas Ben, you're talking about more about the idea of a future sort of gently wiping bits of ceramic with a fine brush. Yeah.
What, toilet cleaner? High-end toilet cleaner?
Toilet cleaner to the ancients.
Yeah, basically, we're more likely sort of gently wiping away the floor, isn't it, basically? You're just wiping the floor in the hope that...
That you discover another floor.
Basically, yes.
A really old floor.
Yeah. I don't know why I thought that was exciting, but I did. But I think the reality is that it's very, very boring, is it?
It's a weird one, isn't it, archaeology? Because I think it's... Yeah, it's right on the cusp there's a lot of information, cultural information attached to it that suggests excitement. So obviously we're talking about the Indiana Jones films.
Yeah. And Tony Robinson.
Well, Indiana Jones is an anagram of Tony Robinson, isn't it? Coincidence? Don't think so. Don't think about it too hard. It doesn't matter.
It's a runic anagram.
It's a runic anagram. If you basically go to the Pyramids of Giza and hold a yak's bollock up to the sky at dawn, the light shines through it and it explains how Tony Robinson is, in fact, an anagram of Indiana Jones.
By the way, anyone listening who doesn't know who Tony Robinson is, he's a much beloved comic actor turned archaeologist or TV archaeology presenter.
Mm. Yeah.
Whereas Palin journeyed through the lands of the world, Tony has journeyed through time itself.
Indeed.
Yes. One thing I think, in terms of Robinson's legacy and the breadth of his scope as an archaeologist, I will say that I think in my whole life I've watched 45 seconds of Time Team. And it's been...
And you felt you got the idea.
I think I've got the idea. I've never actually watched an episode of Time Team. Like, what happens?
It's really good.
Is it?
I mean, I've not watched it for years, but I used to love it, yeah. It's mainly fun because Tony Robinson goes, "We're here in Shropshire, and the local people for years have said that there's a Roman villa under this field. Well, let's find out."
So I'm trying to change channel. Can I change channel on Zoom? I'm just trying to change channel. It's fine. I'd just rather talk to someone else other than Ben right now. Can we just have a look? Can we go across to another podcast? Can I jump on and see
my own experience of Time Team is Tony Robinson has got that far, and by the time he's said Shropshire, there's a big man with a big white beard who said, "It's Cheshire, not Shropshire," and everything that Tony Robinson says is wrong. That's my memory of Time Team.
Well, that's the thing. So the main other character in Time Team is this hoary old bastard with like massive sideburns, yeah, who's like, right, we're going to fucking dig up this field then, is it? Come on then. Brr, brr, brr. And he sort of gets...
I've literally never watched it long enough to meet that guy. I do not have no idea who you're talking about. I don't know who that
He's
is.
He's definitely the highlight. Absolutely the highlight.
Is it?
Yeah.
And is he the one who's the actual qualified archaeologist, and Robinson's just there for the basically for the pizzazz,
for the eye candy,
for the eye candy? Is that what it is? Like Robinson's a presenter, a bit like with this podcast. I know
you're the Omni expert.
I know stuff about history, science, etc. I just love facts. I don't know. It's just, it makes me an idiot. I love books, reading, learning, knowledge. I love it. It's just my addiction. You know what I mean? For me, it's knowledge. So you need that, don't you? Alongside
Ben's glamour.
Ben's the glamour. But it's the same with Sky at Night, isn't it? Patrick Moore was the kind of hoary old expert.
Yeah.
And the presenter was...
What, wasn't it Patrick Moore?
Patrick Moore.
So he did both. That's unusual.
He was so good. Because you barely noticed him changing into the sparkly skirt, did you? Between he would throw to himself. He'd whip off the sparkly outfit and he'd get into his like suit and tie.
1 second he's in a leather-bound study. The next he's
in a leather-bound gusset.
He's next to a leather-bound travel agent with some white goods going past it.
is that guy with the sideburns, he's the actual archaeologist, is he?
Yeah, but he's like, there's a couple of others as well. There's some sort of nice women, normally.
Oh, yeah?
I don't mean nice women.
Well, I mean, you said nice women.
Well, they are nice women, but I don't mean nice women in the way you're thinking. I mean nice women.
Don't tell me what I'm thinking. I'm picturing two women, both of them are dressed as Cleopatra. And they're both trying to outdo each other with how scandalously slight their Cleopatra outfit actually is.
Yeah, exactly. That's not what I meant.
Yeah. Well, that's how Tony Robinson. That was how it was originally. That was what was on paper.
That's how they sold the series. Yeah,
that's how they sold. And all the initial production meetings.
That's how every series gets sold.
Most of them.
Even the 10 o'clock news.
It was the '90s.
Yeah.
All the initial production meetings where we're going to have to reel in Robinson. We cannot. He said his outfit. He wants himself to just be wearing the headdress of a pharaoh, and the rest of his outfit. All he's written is. Oil. This isn't going to fly. We're going to have to reel in Robinson. I know he's intimidating. I know he's much bigger in person than he is on camera. Much bigger.
Okay. I've been in touch with these people. He says it doesn't matter what kind of oil it is. He doesn't mind. Any kind of oil is fine. He's willing to meet us halfway there on the oil.
So his idea was, you think you've seen Builder's bum? Wait till you see me digging up an Etruscan fort naked. It's a whole new level, mate. What a disgusting series he had in mind. Anyway, but they managed to reel him in.
When I say nice women, I just mean just nice women.
Yeah.
Just wearing outdoors gear, just with a fleece on.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. And they're part of the team. They're part of the Time Team.
Couple of wholesome academics who also don't mind getting some dirt under their fingernails types.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Because the other, of course, famous archaeologist is... Lara Croft.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but that's weird, isn't it? That there's that's another sort of concept of this
horny archaeology.
Of the sexy. What is it about archaeologists and sexiness?
I think it's that to represent it in media, it is in itself so boring that you have to sex it up. Otherwise, it's just not good enough.
Ben, that's exactly what I was thinking. I think they have to hit it with sex. So Robinson, like on a jet ski... Just with a couple of old fossils like tied around his mid. And each week, is it a different area? What's the template of the show? Like, what's the kind of format?
Yeah, different place each week. They will dig a trench. If they find nothing in the first trench, they'll dig a second trench. And that's when it gets really exciting.
Because a third trench is now on the cards. And that was not the case at the beginning of the show.
To be continued. Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, so exactly that.
It's an incredibly slow process, isn't it, archaeology? So how do they viscerally sort of make that into must-watch TV?
Isn't their banter key, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all about bants.
Okay, and of it's course, like, bants.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, we found this little cup that we think the Romans probably used to drink wine out of. You don't drink out of a cup, you drink straight out of a can, don't you, Phil? Yeah. That's right.
Oh, yeah. So it simply falls back on old-fashioned stereotypes, sort of an urban metropolitan type, mocking a simple countryman. Is that the idea?
No. So you might quite like it then, Henry.
Well, I'm just thinking, hang on. Just give us another chance.
What it is it? What I've noticed is in a lot of kind of middle of the road television and radio, the fallback banter position is you're an alcoholic.
Yes, yes, yes.
And are you aware of this kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's particularly like the Tony Robinson era and that generation. That would have been like that's general bants, though, isn't it? That's like back in the day.
You get a lot of on the radio, so they'll do the traffic or something, and then the traffic will finish, and they'll say, "Oh, any plans for the weekend, Sally?" And you'll be like, "Well, you know me, a couple of bottles of wine," and they'll go, "Oh, and the rest," and then and you're away.
Yeah, no one's immune to it. I think even on Radio 4 this morning, one of the presenters on the Today programme asked the new Minister for Sport if she had a bit of a sore head after the Euros final.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, it's deep in British culture, though, this. It's deep in British culture. For example, in Britain, if you're an adult holding a glass of water in any kind of workspace environment,
yeah,
within seconds, someone will say, gin and tonic? Oh, vodka? It's so basic in the...
Yeah, it's the basic building block of banter.
It's the basic building block of a little bit of banter, isn't it? Yeah. Ben, I saw you know that word we learnt last week about
gementus, meaning of horse piss.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I came up with the quite philistinical idea. Mm-hmm. If that's a word. That it's bad to learn new words.
Yeah.
But I actually needed that word and I forgot it. Because basically yesterday I watched a horse doing a huge piss for about like 2 or 3 minutes. And it was a really great chance to use the word gementus.
Oh, gementus day.
I'm feeling gementus. We're all feeling gementus. It's a gementus day. It's a gementus day. It would have been a nice moment for a kind of 1940s style musical number.
Yeah.
What a shame.
Tremendous, stupendous, tremendous, tremendous. Yeah, it was in Finsbury Park. I was...
Finsbury Park has come up twice recently, and the first time it was that you ran over a dead rat, and the second time was that a horse had a massive piss.
I did. I ran over that...
There's a lot more fauna in Finsbury Park than I remember from my London years.
You're right, there is a lot. By the way, I ran over that rat, snout to tail. Not side on. That would have been weird.
Mm-hmm. I've got an update on my my strawberries problem. Do that briefly.
Please do.
My partner reckons it's crows, definitely, because she came back to the house. And we've also got some apple trees where the strawberries are.
You live in a sort of German fairy tale. Yeah.
It sounds that way, but really it isn't.
On the first day, the strawberries disappeared, and he thought it was rats. On the second day, the apples disappeared, and he thought it was crows. On the third day, his face was pecked off by a giant crab. It's got that rhythm to it now. It's got fairy tale rhythm. Yeah,
it does. Yeah, and my partner, who is a tiny goblin with long tresses of golden hair, yes,
who won't reveal her real name,
who bashes out 5,000 pairs of clogs a night, doesn't she? She's an all-night clog maker. She just bashes out clogs, and that's what drew you to her, isn't it? Because on the one hand, on the negative column, there was the fact that she's a goblin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But on the positive side, golden hair, and the amount of clogs she's bashing out.
And luckily, you're a heavy enough sleeper, you can sleep through that. Most people couldn't.
Yeah. Well, you're knackered because you're spending all day trying to dispose of those clogs, aren't you? So you're absolutely knackered by the time the evening comes around.
Yeah, I've already flooded the market on Facebook Marketplace. I think I've put too many up now, so people don't expect to spend that much on them. Yeah,
you've devalued the clog. There was a brief clog bubble, wasn't there? Well, you should have sold up, Ben.
Yeah.
You should have sold up then.
Anyway, my partner came home the other day and she witnessed a gang of six crows.
Gang.
Hang on. This is the perfect opportunity to use the greatest collective noun. Known to man.
A murder.
An attempted manslaughter. That's sparrows.
An aggravated armed...
robbery of terrapins.
A white-collar fraud of sardines.
A death by misadventure of badger.
and impersonating a police officer of swans. I mean, we could go on, couldn't we? That's the thing with this.
Please, please, please do go on, though, in the correct way.
Oh, just she basically came home and there were six crows just going hammer and tongs at all of our apples, and they've basically ruined our apple tree by pecking off all the apples.
Six is also, it's a sinister number as well, isn't it? Six, famously.
Yeah.
Crows, six.
The estate agents don't tell you this because they say it's an enchanted forest. That's a good thing.
Mm.
You get to see, you know, you might meet a magical swan.
Sometimes a centaur want to use your downstairs toilet. Don't worry about it.
It won't be too gementous. It's only half gementous. I'm aware it's a deer, not a horse. But surely there's not a word for relating to hot deer piss.
There is, I'm afraid. It's spumentous. It's even worse than geumentous. But there are negatives, aren't there? Which is, on the positive side, crows will take your apples.
Mm-hmm. Curses.
Curses.
I mean, the good thing is maybe that, you know, if we didn't have the apples, they'd be doing that to my eyes.
Yes.
Ben, naive, sweet boy that you are, you know, they are going to do that to your eyes.
Yeah, that's true.
The apples are very much a first course. Yeah. One option you've got is to wear apple glasses. It was to stick apples on your eyes at all times. But then you're much more likely to wander into the cursed troll swamp that's the rear side of your property. So it swings and roundabouts, isn't it?
Anyway, that's just a little update. So I think the current leading theory, and maybe we've solved it, actually, is it six crows?
Yeah, it's a tricky. What are you going to do, Ben?
Crows.
Nothing we can do, really.
I'm interested in something to do with, like, what we project onto animals. So, like, if it was doves, what would this conversation be? You wouldn't have said a gang of doves, for one thing.
We'd call them pigeons instead. I mean, even if they were doves, you wouldn't call them doves. Not in this situation. They're too pure.
No, but if they were, like, white, perfect white doves.
If they were perfect white doves, I'm just thinking, how would you...
Well, that's end of the world stuff, isn't it? If perfect white doves start ruining an apple tree.
That's in Revelations, isn't it, when the doves take the apples?
Yeah, exactly. And lo, the doves come and destroyed the perfect apple tree and the strawberries, and it's, oh, okay. It's
and the baby bites the nurse's tit.
It's that sort of thing, isn't it? Yeah, it's end of days.
Yeah.
And exactly. The clocks weep blood.
And lo, the puppy has burnt your toast deliberately.
And the crabs get into short fiction. They start writing it, reading it.
It's kind of auto-fiction. They mainly draw from their own lives.
Yeah, it's a kind of reportage or crabotage.
Okay, time to read your emails. Thanks to everyone who sent us an email at threebeansaladpod@gmail.com.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress, like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your health.
My beautiful horse.
This is from Charlotte.
Hello, Charlotte.
Dear Beans, I was listening to last week's Fanjambo talk. Ben's assertion that you can't say to a hairdresser, "Let's just zip it, shall we?" and not speak, sent a deep, cringy shudder through me. I can indeed confirm this is not a viable option, as I tried this myself with disastrous results.
Oh dear.
After years of dreading the hairdresser small talk, I decided it can't be any worse to just declare, "Don't feel you have to talk to me." I was wrong. The look of confusion, then hurt on the hairdresser's face, followed by pin drop silence until I left, was indeed worse.
It's so tricky. It's a very tricky area, but that's why the Fanjambo protocol was first that's why we came up with it, isn't it? Because it's such a difficult area.
I mean, thank you to Charlotte. I mean, Charlotte is a true pioneer, I would say. Because we've all dared to dream of that, haven't we? But she's gone and done it. She's seen the dark side of the moon.
On the topic of haircuts, this is from Jess. Mm-hmm. My dad has a hairdresser-specific Fanjambo alternative.
Okay.
On being asked by the barber how he would like his haircut, he has always replied, "In silence."
But you can do anything with the style. Is that what you're saying? So he's walked out with like purple afros and stuff, and like
having caused offence with his silent answer.
But at least not had an awkward conversation.
Wow!
In silence, that's very good.
Bollocking for you, Henry.
Accessing listener bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
Charles in Warwick emails.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm sure you've been inundated with emails regarding Henry's Prime Minister of Scotland bollock.
Oh, I knew that was coming. Yeah, sorry.
I knew. I caught it as it was happening, and I thought I'll let the listeners catch this one. Yeah, so you described Nicola Sturgeon as the former Prime Minister of Scotland. She is, of course, the former First Minister of Scotland.
First and Prime. Do you know what I mean? They're pretty close, though, Henry. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. No, I'm rejecting the bollock. Prime is just a posh way of saying first. Same thing. It's the same thing.
Well, Charles from Warwick says, rest assured, I don't think there's any issue in mixing up first with prime, as they're perfectly interchangeable. Now, I'll get back to drinking a bottle of first with my prime-born daughter on my lap as I watch Rambo Prime Blood on Amazon First.
Fucking hell. Touche. I mean, yeah. Can I say, I take that on board, and the amount of effort you put into that suggests to me that you are an absolute first cock. I'm going to declare a moratorium on that one. I'm not going to accept it. Rejecting it feels petty because the amount of effort you put in. So I'm gonna say bollock ceasefire.
Okay.
I'm offering a bollock truce if he'll take it, if he'll accept it.
Interesting. So it's like it's a hanging bollock.
I'm using prime as a descriptive. She was the prime minister. She was also the best minister. She was also the top minister, and she was also the first minister. You know, all of those statements are true, I would say.
Well, this sounds like you're reflecting it, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm reflecting it. Yeah, sort of right back in your face. Reflecto bollock.
And we also talked last week about the new Marks and Spencer's chocolate covered custard creams.
Yes.
I have enjoyed watching people on social media tag us in them trying them and buying them and trying them because they heard about them on our podcast.
Oh, I've not seen that.
Oh, really? I've not seen that. I'll have to have a look at that. How are they going down?
In general, I think the big sticking point is that it costs £3. Ooh. And you only get six.
Oh, crumbs.
So it's premium stuff.
It really is, isn't it?
We've had an email from Blake. Whilst listening to your recent episode, during the email segment, I came over in a cold sweat hearing Andrew's recommendation of a new M&S chocolate-coated custard cream biscuit. Mm. I'm usually a fan of the M&S biscuit, especially their staple more chocolate than biscuit.
Sure.
I've not tried that one. But it reminded me of a time at uni when sharing a chocolate fountain with some friends, where I casually partook in dipping a few custard creams.
What's he talking about?
I didn't know you could get food poisoning from a chocolate fountain. But later that night, I reversed chocolate custard fountain into those biscuits.
No, it's a mystery, isn't it? How is it that you could get any sort of bug transmission from a sort of open fountain in which hundreds of people are dipping their shit-smeared hands? It's really weird, isn't it? It's never been explained.
I think, Mike, what you say is true, but I think before you said that, I was kind of with him. I was like, but it's constantly moving, so... Doesn't that stop the bacteria from...
Bacteria abhors motion, doesn't it?
It's a constant fresh source of from a chocolate spring, isn't it? Yeah. That then goes directly out to sea. It's not just 4 litres of chocolate sauce being recirculated for 17 hours.
As a lovely bacteria-warming sort of temperature. So I don't think we can blame that on the custard cream itself. It sounds more like...
No, but it was. I enjoyed it. Thank you, Blake.
I also liked the sort of image of a reverse chocolate fountain.
It was visceral.
I've never taken part in a chocolate fountain.
Have you not?
No.
I've been at a couple of weddings where they've got a chocolate fountain.
It's a bit like the sweepstake thing. You reach a certain level of, you know, you get a certain social circle, friendships, and people start inviting you to this kind of stuff.
Yes, it's true. There's a bit of a pattern, isn't it, of me... The other thing I've never heard, what is this RSVP? RSVP? What is RSVP? What is that?
Recent emails, dear Speens, as an employee of Marks and Spencer's Bureau de Change, I'd like to confirm that we do indeed get swamped in luxurious Ecuadorian dark chocolate at the beginning of every shift. With us and the notes being absolutely slathered in the rich brown nectar, it does make counting out the UAE dirhams more difficult, but it's worth it to deliver that M&S luxury brand. Yours in fermented, dried, roasted, refined, and tempered cocoa beans, Reese.
Thank you, Reese.
Inspuffulated in the most disgustingly decadent pan-Ecuadorian choco filth.
And now, praline travellers' checks.
Are there actually M&S travellers' agents? Is that true?
Yeah, Bureau de Change. That's where I will, if I'm going to get some money, I will go to an M&S Bureau de Change.
Really?
I like the level of service. Slightly obsequious in a nice way, but not too much.
And is this in a branch of M&S?
I prefer the cold, hard, transactional post office.
Oh, do you?
I'm sorry, guys. But who's still using Bureau de Change? Don't you just go on holiday and use your contactless or whatever? I mean, or withdraw some money?
Yeah, I like an M&S Bureau de Change.
I've literally never seen one.
Because they'll ask you where you're going and what you're doing, but not in a way that's too familiar, you know?
So post office, they're not remotely interested.
They're not even going to ask you. Wow.
Post office also make it easier because however much you might have spent all of your time walking to the post office and in the queue for the post office trying to work out exactly how much cash you might need for your holiday.
Right.
That becomes completely irrelevant by the time you reach the front because they will tell you what they've got and that's what you're having and that's it. Because it's always less than you imagine. So it's just, well, this is going to have to do. You know, it's going to be £17.50.
So you say, I would like 200 euros. And they say, we've got 1,000 lira.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, fine.
And you're like, I'm not even going to Turkey, but fine, I'll take it.
I'll take it. Exactly, yeah. Sorry, it's actually Italian lira. Fine, I'll just, whatever. Yeah.
I've gone on YouTube to look at observational stand-up routines from the 70s or something. I've no idea what you're talking about. I've literally, who the hell goes to go to a Bureau de Change anymore? I didn't even know this still existed. It's contactless.
It was not.
Europe. So, and are you taking cash, like British cash? Because even UK cash is pretty much over, isn't it?
I don't know. It's like some local cash.
No, but are you turning British cash into foreign cash? Or are you?
No, I'm just buying some.
You're
cash
buying some cash.
Card.
Henry, what are you giving the muggers when they're at you at knife point? What are you giving them?
Yeah, exactly.
Contactless.
What are you throwing in the air as you make good your escape?
Yeah.
I suppose you're right. I hadn't thought of that. I'm in a vulnerable position potentially if I get mugged.
If you're buying a bit of tat somewhere, a bit of tourist tat, or a bit of street food, that people don't mind a bit of cash now and again.
Also, yesterday I didn't have any euros. And the thing I'd ordered was less than €5, and they said you don't do card under €5. So I had to buy a rhubarb turnover that I didn't want. Think about that, Henry.
And that is travelling.
And that is exploring other cultures. Can I just ask, what's your most sort of UK-centric pastry?
Well, we hardly ever sell it, but I mean I could probably hustle up something like that. And
bearing in mind something really sort of jingoistically British, there's something that a Union Jack flag waver might be snacking on during a royal parade or something. Well, I suppose we could.
Room up turnover here for the last 7 years. Someone left, another British tourist left it behind. We weren't sure what to do with it.
But I thought, so when I go on holiday, so I'll take my card. And then withdraw cash from a cash point when I'm in that country.
As a charge?
Yeah, but there's a charge at the Bureau de Change. Is it definitely less? I think this is. I don't want to sound patronising, but I think people that don't live in London have a little bit more time on their hands. And
I just want to waste it by going to a Bureau de Change.
How do I fill the gaping void? Give myself a set of tasks which actually aren't necessary, but will help fill the gaping void. I'll go to M&S and change the money.
Lovely, isn't it? Well, you might bump into someone you know.
Well, maybe I'll give it a go. I didn't even know they were in there. So what floor are they on?
Depends on the branch.
That's a really strange question.
I've never even seen the Bureau de Change in an M&S. I've never even seen it.
You've got to keep going high enough. I would say probably, actually, to be fair, you've got to keep going high enough or low enough.
Okay.
Yeah, it's normally high or low, and you're probably having to go through metres of ladies' pants to get there. Final emails from Chris.
Hello, Chris.
Chris writes, Henry's story of being attracted to objects on the road while cycling surfaced a long-forgotten memory of mine, the time I briefly wore a slug moustache.
End of it. Please end it there. Let's just... I don't need anything else. That's a superb email.
ferryman. Patreon.com/3beansalad.
Thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You are the chosen few. Patreon.com/3beansalad. Thanks to everyone who signed up. It means an awful lot to us. And you get all sorts of stuff. You get bonus episodes. You get ad-free episodes. And at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike spent a bit of time last night.
Sure did.
It's one I know you were looking forward to, Mike, because it was it was the boiled buffet, wasn't it? A buffet where everything is boiled.
And here's my report.
It was the boiled buffet where everything is boiled last night at the Sean Bean Lounge. Tony Coffey tucked into a boil-in-a-bag bolognese, while Karen Lopez, Joanne Schuman, Jay Olgeen and Paul Buckingham clogged up the boiled omelette stand the whole night. Amber Loftus and Robot Moth Pachapsky lost discipline early doors and initiated a boiled food fight by luzzing steaming gyoza at Joe Barkley and Aaron Barron McLaren. Retaliation with boiled eggs was inevitable, as was loungers being caught in the crossfire, including David Cooper, Yellow Frog, Donna Tararoka, and Mick Ford, who took a full 10-pack to the groin. Steph Fox Adcock teamed up with Honor Drummond and Eve McCafferty to first ensnare Sam Neill and Samuel Stagel, then strip both their outfits of their copious elastic material, before using it to construct a powerful catapult with which they pelted Mafulio T with boiled butternut squash, Mark Pierce with a boiled Cumberland sausage, and Beefy Keefy Tyler Orsak, Sophie Evans and Matthew Bentham Clark with the complete boiled works of Stephen King. Lara Scott, Peter Gordon and Steve Pease tipped over a trestle table to create some cover, but failed to remove the Sean Bean Mulligatawny soup samovar, which spilled its boiling contents into Patrick Meldrum, Dean Humphreys, George Crowe and Harry Kidd, all of whom were minding their own business in the boiled Bombay mix queue. Steph raised a white flag to try and make a safe dash across the lounge to the boiled Impossible Burger stand, where Cara Evans and Jacqueline Gill were doing a brisk trade selling big hot mushrooms cut into circles and pretending they came from a lab. The white hat was mistaken in the steamy haze for a chef's hat by Kate Winsenberg, who, alongside Andras Fant, thought it would make for a perfect white flag to try and initiate an armistice. Magda Gerska was dispatched to intercept the chef and bring back the hat, but by then Steph was long gone. Visibility was decreasing rapidly, and she returned instead with the feeding bibs of besties Tim and Michael, which were deemed too heavily stained to surrender with. On the other end of the spectrum, Colin, Tim, Sarah Kerrison, and Kate Cooper-Owen saw no need to give up the fight, having already annexed the boiled pudding zone and the boiled offal games centre. They used boiled yoghurt to smash the line of Carrie Breaking Spain, Andy Cormican, Keith Ashton, and Warren Chester, ignoring their cries for mercy, and managed to seize the anti-chin burn ice water plunge basin, which was being guarded with neither strength nor spine by Ollie and Paul Carlon. Palmer Johnny Earl, Dr. Nathan Sparks, Winky Poo, and Ben Jackson had no idea any of this was going on, as they held their own mini silent disco dancing to 90s Euro trance while stuffing their gobs with fistfuls of boiled taramasalata. Texas James was similarly oblivious as he boiled a banjo and sang a song in praise of someone or something called Daisy. Greg Hilton, Charlie Carter, Jonathan Santori, and Nathan Smith took part in a boiled food treasure hunt devised by Tim Moy Knipp, in which, by eating their way blindfolded along a cryptic track of frankfurters laid by Callum McCombs and Joanne B, they could win prizes ranging from Claire Mary Ellery and Neverland's famous boiled popcorn, double boiled granola by Stephen Zrenka and Ben Bronstein, or even Christina Nicol and Nathan Stout's stuffed rainbow baguette, brackets boiled. They had to be careful though, take the wrong frankfurter turning and they could land in a boiling pit of John Earl's homemade jam, or slide over the edge of and into Fumi Hayashi's giant overheated Red Leicester fondue bucket, where all you could hope to save you was getting hold of one of abandoned Arse Factory's slippery croutons. Special commendation goes to Sarah Rosling for sucking up all the steam at the end of the night. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the end of the show. We'll finish off with a version of our theme tune, sent in by one of you lot.
It's the end of the series as well, is it?
No.
So it is.
No.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
No!
No! Why? Why? If only we could carry on, but we just can't. There's no way
we've just decided not to.
We've decided not to. It's quite arbitrary in a way. Oh, no!
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're back in September, my word.
Blimey.
With our new school bags and our satchels and pens and...
A fresh slug on our upper lips.
Yep.
We're going to play this version sent in by Dav from Ireland. Thank you, Dav.
Thank you, Dav.
And until September, goodbye!
Goodbye.
Cheerio!
Patreon.